Hello and welcome to the Sustainable Life podcast. My name is Em and I'm the host of this podcast and the founder of the free Sustainable Life app, an app for sustainable living made easy. You can download it today on both Apple and Android. The Sustainable Life app connects you with sustainable brands and businesses worldwide. And the purpose of this podcast is to interview various experts around the globe about topics relating to sustainability. Our podcast's objective is to help keep you informed, encouraged, and inspired. So we're back this week with part two of our interview with Dr. Shibita Deja. And in this week's interview, she's going to go into a little bit more detail about how to make our immune system stronger and the steps we need to take in order to do so. Please check out the blog post titled How a Naturopathic Doctor Views Your Health, written by Dr. Deja, which is available on our blog on www.sustainablelifeapp.com/blog. So without further ado, let's get started.
So you have the list. Now, like I said, we're going to talk about the third level of the pyramid, which is supporting those organ systems that are maybe diseased or weakened. And how you pick that up is very often testing. So I often find with patients that come into my office or that I'm seeing over telehealth, I'm looking in their chart and they haven't had blood work for over 2 years. Now, for me, when I see that, the first thing that I'm doing after looking obviously at foundations like we discussed is looking at what testing they have, and that can be a general blood panel, so a blood work panel. Now, a naturopath can order this, or a family medical doctor, including a walk-in clinic doctor, can order these panels.
Yeah.
And the problem
with the family doctor, it's free. You're a naturopath, you have to pay though.
Thank you. That's so well said. That's exactly what I was gonna say. Yeah, exactly. So that's but that's a very important distinction because patients don't often know this, and some are willing to pay for what a medical doctor isn't able or willing to check off or get tested, because they're also they're looking at being cost effective and they have their own requirements to adhere to, right? So there's other things going into that decision. And I fully respect and appreciate that. But again, you as a patient have to be your best advocate and decide, is this important to me at this time? Can I get some covered through MSP? Can I get some that through the naturopath that I would then pay for? So I would say the top assessment panels that I recommend or I'm checking off for my lab requisitions for my patients are the healthy living assessment, hematology, thyroid, and men's health. So healthy living would be everything, just like a complete overhaul of your body. So this is all blood work, right?
Yeah.
You're looking
like a category on the form that you're checking off.
And exactly.
You're describing what each one means so that if a person's based in like France or USA or New Zealand, wherever they're listening, they can at least kind of get a sense of what that healthy living test means so that they can explain that to their doctors and say, can you do like a general panel of everything? And then also, you know, if they're a man, do like a men's health.
Yes.
So like whatever the men's stuff entails, which you'll explain. So go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the healthy living assessment, basically these are comprehensive panels of blood tests. So they're looking at your liver, your kidney, obviously blood, electrolyte, heart, and metabolic health. So it's a really great either initial screening tool or ordered as a follow-up panel to compare to the last panel to see whether a therapy is effective, or B, if something is like continuing to be deficient or in excess, right? It's a good follow-up measure. And it's very useful to get a complete overhaul of that patient's organ function from a blood perspective, so a blood work panel. And it helps to pick up things like, you know, it's looking at liver function tests. So is there hepatitis, fatty liver disease? It's looking at kidneys. So it's looking for, you know, poor kidney function. And poor liver and kidney function, when we see those numbers either elevated or deficient, or decreased rather, it's very important when I'm then looking to this to solve this patient's problem, because I'm thinking then going higher and higher on the therapeutic order, that treatment pyramid, because I want to prescribe either a herb or a supplement that's going to help. But if their liver and kidney function is deficient, they're not going to be clearing that particular herb or supplement efficiently. So again, first things first, you have to look at foundations of health. You have to support the weakened systems. And so we would then support those systems and then take it to step 3 or 4.
So I have been asked by Dr. Theja to stress to all listeners listening to this podcast to make sure that if you have not had a blood test or general blood panel done in the last 2 years, to make that a priority once the world returns back to normal post-COVID. Now back to the interview.
Yeah, so the others were hematology assessment. So that's looking at more of just the complete blood count, looking at your red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets, iron, and vitamin B12 is added as well as folate or B9 into the hematology assessment. This is also included in the healthy living assessment minus B12 and folate. So you will get a complete blood count on your on your healthy living assessment. So that's why that's a great initial ordering or a panel to order. The third one that I mentioned was thyroid assessment. And the fourth one is men's health. So thyroid is probably, so these are the top four that I recommend. Thyroid, I would probably move to the second most commonly ordered assessment panel for me, because the healthy living assessment is only going to look at TSH, or also known as thyroid stimulating hormone. That is a hormone that's coming from the brain directed at your thyroid gland, which is a butterfly-shaped organ that sits in the middle of your neck. And it's telling your thyroid, you know, whether to produce thyroid hormone or not. And it's a feedback loop. So once your thyroid produces the thyroid hormone and it's elevated or deficient, it is going to feed back to the brain and affect that TSH number, either elevated or decreased. And that tells me whether the patient is in hypo or hyperthyroid state. So the thyroid assessment, that additional panel, breaks it down to not only TSH, but the two particular types of thyroid hormone, which is free T3 and free T4, as well as antibodies. So that would be your immune system reacting to and attacking your thyroid gland, and that would be evident in the anti-TPO antibodies. So that is a much more complete assessment, and I need to see that for a patient to accurately treat them with either, and this can be a podcast in and of itself, but to treat them appropriately, essentially, because there are a number of thyroid-specific treatments. So that assessment helps me look at that. It's also very eye-opening if I, you know, see that the antibody levels are high, because this patient might then have something called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is that autoimmune reaction towards the thyroid. And that constitutes a little bit of a different therapy for low or high thyroid, actually. So that's very helpful. And then finally, the men's health panel is an additional assessment panel for men. So that will include prostate stimulating antigen, so PSA, which is representative of a potential prostate cancer, as well as a lipid panel, because for men, they typically suffer heart attacks about 7 years earlier than women. So that's why it makes lipid measurements a really important part of the men's health assessment. And then free testosterone is also added to the men's health assessment. So that's something that I also order for every male patient that is coming to me that needs blood work.
Okay. Do women have anything special like that?
Women have either the fertility assessment panel or the female hormone assessment. So very often I will add that if there are hormone related concerns. So on top of the healthy living assessment, then you can order a female hormone assessment panel as well. So looking at estrogen, progesterone, also testosterone, DHEA, and prolactin.
So like, how do you know if your hormones are out of whack? Just out of curiosity. Like when I was a kid, I was told that it's like, if you have hair where you shouldn't have hair, you know, like, like a mustache or like a beard or something like that. That means you've got like some problems with your hormones, girl. So, or like, I would think it was just genetics. And then I went to the doctor, like I didn't have it, but like one of my cousins did. And I was like, oh, I think it's just genetics. And when I went to the doctor with her, they were like, oh, it could be hormones. And that was really like eye-opening because I was like, what? And then, so there's like a certain level of like hair that women have that's normal. And then there's a level that you can get, which is hormonal. So that's how I've always viewed it, but I'm probably wrong. And can you please tell me why?
No, what you're touching on basically is hirsutism. So hirsutism is that term refers to abnormal hair growth, hair where it shouldn't be. And for women, it's typically the back, the chest, or on their face. I'm Indian, you're Indian, so totally. I like facial hair.
You can have like a certain amount and it's okay, but then there's an amount that's not okay.
So that's where
that's when it's hormonal. That's what I was told.
And so you're right in regards to that. So the fine hairs that can very often be genetic or from a particular ethnicity, that is normal. It tends to be more coarse and really dark. So dark, coarse hair on your face, on your chest, on your back. And what you're referring to, so that's hirsutism. And what hirsutism is one of the symptoms of polycystic ovarian syndrome. So that, again, we could do a whole podcast just on that. There's you know, multiple schools of thought on the differential diagnosis there, what constitutes a diagnosis. So really we should actually do a hormone specific podcast because it's difficult to treat. It can be difficult to treat, but once you look at the hormones, it becomes apparent that there's a potential imbalance with, say, estrogen in relation to progesterone. So this type of estrogen dominance, where estrogen is higher in relation to progesterone, kind of, again, going back to like the root cause, the base layer of that pyramid, very often can contribute to multiple disease states, meaning endometriosis, polycystic ovarian syndrome. It can be a cause, rather, of premenstrual syndrome. So, you know, your menstrual cycle, your period shouldn't be, you shouldn't be on the couch in excruciating pain every month. That means that there's something going on with your hormones. There's some sort of imbalance there, in addition to probably inflammation. But the female hormone assessment can be very helpful in figuring that out and looking at the, you know, major hormones, the interactions between them, their levels. But keep in mind, so I'll just say this caveat, with hormone testing, there is blood, saliva, or urine that you can collect and submit to get your hormone levels tested. Now, your blood is really just a snapshot at that moment of what's happening. And so for hormones, as you know, in a female cycle, over the month, your hormones are fluctuating before and after ovulation. So it really matters when you go for the testing, if it is blood work. That's why for a more complex case or patients that come to me and that have seen multiple practitioners, even sometimes multiple specialists and still haven't gotten a resolution of their symptoms, those are the patients that I'm sending for salivary, so saliva or urine testing, because it tests all your metabolites. It gives a complete 24-hour picture, and there's even month-long hormone assessments. So that gives me a very in-depth, complete picture of the entire pathway and what's happening from cholesterol, which is where your hormones stem from. So they're like, you know, different strokes for different folks. Yeah.
So we kind of got stuck on blood tests there.
Yeah. Well, we did cover then hormone testing. That's the second, you know, then there's specialized testing. So like I said, the general blood work, we talked about all the assessment panels, my top four that I go to. Then I'm looking at specialized testing. One of those categories is hormone testing. The next one would be gastrointestinal testing. And the third would be environmental or nutritional. So gastrointestinal would, under that category, would be food sensitivity testing, celiac panel, candida panel, SIBO breath test, or a comprehensive digestive stool analysis. So all of those are pretty common to be ordered, but I will say the top two that I order are the food sensitivity testing and the comprehensive digestive stool analysis. Now, what those are looking for in the food sensitivity is looking for your IgG immunoglobulins. So that's what your immune system is producing in response to a particular food that your body is reacting to. So this is where that food possibly has seeped through into the blood, right? So through the cell into the blood, which is, you know, that's called leaky gut or increased intestinal permeability. It is now presenting to the immune system as an antigen, as, you know, this is not supposed to be here. Alert, alert. Immune system is reacting to that particular food. IgG is elevating, and that is what is picked up on a food sensitivity test.
Whoa. So can you say that all one more time so that I digest it properly? So you eat a food, you're getting the stool test or whatever.
And so the food sensitivity test.
Oh, sorry.
So this is a blood. This is a blood test.
So you're like, you eat the food, it goes into your gut, and then somehow it ends up into your bloodstream and it's not supposed to. So how is it not supposed to? Like, normal foods that you eat, they go into your poo and they digest and they don't go into your blood or your stool. Sorry. And so I speak kindergarten, you guys. So it goes into your poo. But like, so like, how the heck does it get into your blood? Like, how does that happen? I don't get it.
That's such a great question. And the short answer is leaky gut syndrome. Three words, leaky gut syndrome. So what that is, and I'll, you know, briefly explain that. So lining your cells, lining your gastrointestinal tract are cells. They're tightly knit together. And that's the way they should, that's the way they're supposed to be, tightly knit together. When there is inflammation through toxins, through alcohol, medication, so foods that you're eating, for example, that you're sensitive to, which is what we're talking about, viruses, bacteria, that can cause inflammation, and that can cause the cells to not be so tightly knit together. They are now spaced apart. They are leaky. And that's why when you are ingesting foods in a leaky gut syndrome patient, the food particles, because now they're, you know, microscopic, they're all digested, they're seeping through those cells and getting into the bloodstream. And that is when the immune system is on alert saying, this isn't supposed to be here. What is happening? And that is your IgG levels that are increasing. So you don't always...
Can I ask a question then?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so let's say I'm allergic to honey or I'm allergic to potatoes. And I eat said honey and potatoes and it goes into my gut. And then I eat cherries and I eat strawberries and I eat, I don't know, like bread. When the potatoes and the honey are making their way into my blood, is it possible that the potatoes and the bread also make their way into my blood and you think I'm allergic to the potatoes and bread, but actually it's the honey's fault? Sorry, that's very specific, but
So... Say that again.
Okay. So, I know that's literally where my brain went when you said explained all that. So let's say I'm allergic to honey. I'll simplify it.
Okay.
Yeah. And it goes into my gut and I've been eating honey frequently and it's made the lining of my gut like compromised. Mm-hmm. And then let's say I eat a bunch of potatoes and I'm not allergic to potatoes, but because for some reason ate the potatoes with the honey, the potatoes also made their way into my blood system along with the honey. So in your report, are you seeing the potatoes and thinking I may have a reaction to potatoes when really it's the honey's fault?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. That can happen. That's a false positive, right? So potatoes are now elevated and your body actually isn't allergic to it. And I will say that this happens more frequently when the patient has leaky gut syndrome. Not all patients that are doing the food sensitivity tests have leaky gut.
Okay.
Right? So this doesn't always happen. And Rocky Mountain, the company that I use to send the blood sample to, has numeric numbers associated with each particular food type. There's between 120 to over 220. It depends on price now comes into play as to how many foods you want tested. So you can get a numeric value that says what you are reacting to and how severely. So what particular food type you're reacting to and then how severely you're reacting to it.
Interesting, because when I went to my normal allergist, he was like, you can only test up to 10 foods. Pick which ones you want.
Oh, interesting. That might have been for anaphylactic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It might have been. Yeah. And that's IgE that constitutes the anaphylactic reaction. IgG is a food sensitivity, and that can be really, again, like I say, commonly head to toe, brain fog, joint pain, gas, bloating, eczema, psoriasis. So it can be a number of symptoms. But again, working back to that bottom layer of the pyramid, or the top three, I should say, you're looking at what the root cause is of those many symptoms. And one of those could be a sensitivity to particular foods.
That's fascinating. So what you're saying is this test, where you can test up to 220, depending on price, foods, does it show you levels of like which ones are higher, which ones are lower? Like if
Absolutely.
The potato went in with the honey, will the potato be at the same level as the honey? And will you get a false positive with the potato?
So this is why it's separated into elevated, borderline, and then normal foods.
Okay.
So really elevated is red, borderline is yellow, green is normal. So what I will tell my patients is that I will look at that report. First of all, see the number of foods that are both elevated and borderline. Mm-hmm. Because I even include borderline in the foods that I recommend my patients remove for the next 2 months. Because that's, you know, causing some type of inflammatory response. So I want no inflammation if possible. If we have that information, let's use it. So I want to see what the number of foods, because the number of foods show me whether that patient has leaky gut, or it's at least one, it's a confirmation symptom, confirmation report for that particular disease state. So in this case, if there is say 20 foods that are on elevated and borderline, that's quite a lot, right? I see reports with just two or three elevated and two or three borderline. So when I see 20, that's a number of foods. So honey and potatoes that are seeping through the cells of the gut and going into the bloodstream.
But like potatoes you're eating with the honey, so you're not too sure which is, like, how would you know which is worse or which is the culprit?
Then with each particular food item that is tested, you get a number. So you not only get the color-coded elevated, borderline, normal, you also get with honey. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay. The bottom line here is that it doesn't matter when you eat the foods, whether you eat them together or not.
Okay. That's really good to know, because that's what I was thinking. Matter. Was like, if I eat it with something I'm allergic to, how do you know I'm allergic to the thing?
No, it is going based off of blood work. And that's why this is a pretty accurate representation of your immune system's response. So it's actually looking at the levels of each, and I'll give a numeric value as well as a general elevated, borderline, or normal. And you want to, since we're talking about the particular foods, when to accurately assess the food sensitivity panel, you want to consume a wide variety of foods. So if you are thinking that, I might be allergic to honey, I might be allergic to potatoes. So if there's a suspected food, you want to add typically 2 servings per week for about 2 weeks prior to the collection, so that there is sufficient antibody formation, because that would then be a false negative if you didn't do that. Right? Because then the antibodies aren't forming. The body's not going to pick that up. Because you're
So it's not just like, here's your blood and we're going to introduce this like food to your blood. No, it already has to be in your blood in order for you to know.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Good to know.
Yeah. But one caveat then is with this is that you are not like, so you want to continue to avoid the foods that have produced an anaphylactic reaction, right? Totally. The IgG. So for you, the tree nuts, plums, apples, that's something that you, if you are going to do a food sensitivity test, you sure as heck aren't going to include those foods.
For sure. Yeah. That's like,
so just remember that. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a distinction there.
Okay. So moving on. Are we still at gastrointestinal or?
Yeah. So I will just say the comprehensive. So then the two most commonly tests that I order under the gastrointestinal heading. So we did hormonal, under specialized heading, hormonal, gastrointestinal, and environment. Under gastrointestinal, food sensitivity and the comprehensive digestive stool analysis are the two commonly prescribed that I recommend. And so this is to help your listeners know what testing would fit best for them at this particular time. Once, because again, this is recorded during the COVID-19 pandemic. So once measures are lifted, once people feel more comfortable going in to the testing facility, what can they do? So the comprehensive digestive stool analysis is great because it's looking at every marker of inflammation, how your body is digesting particular carbohydrates, fat. So it's looking at vegetable carbohydrate fibers, fat enzymes. It is looking at your bacterial protozoa, viral load in the stool. So obviously this is a stool test. So whether you have a parasite or a ringworm, for example, and also yeast. So it's very helpful for patients that have symptoms, you know, either IBS, so irritable bowel syndrome, just general gas and bloating, but I've done it for a number of patients that have ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, which are inflammatory bowel disorders, which I myself was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. So I know the value of these tests, and they can be very helpful in picking up a particular parasite or, say, for example, yeast, and get to the root cause of what's going on to constitute, say, diarrhea or mucus in the stool, trying to get rid of the parasite and yeast, and then seeing whether that helped to improve the patient's symptoms. So it helps to give a lot more information. And the comprehensive stool analysis will also test for the top natural and conventional antifungals and antibacterials and see what your stool is sensitive to. So say, for example, you had a candida yeast overgrowth in your stool, or Proteus, which is a type of bacteria in your stool, it will then test for the natural agents, natural antibacterial, say berberine or oregano oil, and see whether that pathogen is sensitive to that agent. So it helps to guide treatment as well, and eliminates a lot of heartache and guessing and testing when it comes to treatment.
That's
so it can be very helpful. Yeah.
And then also finally, breath test, right?
Yeah. So the SIBO breath test, so that small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, that's commonly, so about 50% of patients diagnosed with SIBO often have irritable bowel syndrome or vice versa. So there's quite a big overlap when it comes to these two patient populations. And SIBO breath test is a great way to diagnose whether that person has SIBO or irritable bowel syndrome, and because treatments are very different. If you have,
do they have
SIBO,
to have stinky breath? Like, is that? I know other people must be thinking this too,
and that's why I love talking to you, because this is so helpful to your listeners, because that's what they're thinking too. No, you do not need to have stinky breath to have, or, you know, to constitute SIBO breath testing. What you're looking for on the breath test is actually the bacterial fumes that are produced. So these are bacteria that have migrated from the large intestine where they should be to the small intestine where they shouldn't be, and are producing methane and or hydrogen gas. And that's what the breath test is looking for.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Isn't methane gas fart?
Is it? I don't know.
I don't know. I think so. So maybe it is stinky. Like, maybe stinky breath could be a part of it. I'm googling it now. I'm googling it. It's in my iPhone. You can move on. You need to Google
it. Okay. And then finally, the last category of more specialized testing is environmental. And that, so the subcategories there are really hair or urine element analysis. So this would be heavy metals, which commonly can be an underlying root cause for a number of symptoms, even if it's just brain fog or fatigue. If that patient has been exposed, we know that they're in an environment, say a hairdresser, construction worker, painter, they've been exposed for their career to a number of toxic fumes. This would be on my short list of specialized testing that patient would undergo. And it helps to determine whether A, they have heavy metals, and B, how high those levels are. And then the second most commonly specialized test that falls under the environmental category would be the nutrigenomics test. So this is a very cool test. I know my husband has done this. It applies information about your genes and provides then a report detailing a particular nutrition, sports, and exercise plan that is basically suited to your genetic makeup. It's very cool.
That sounds so neat.
Yeah. So that's something that, you know, I've maybe ordered a couple here and there, because these, you know, the specialized testing, I will say the nutrigenomics are probably on the more expensive side of things compared to the food sensitivity test. The wide range, I'd say between $2 to $650. Like, that's the range for specialized testing. And that's goodness. Why I always start with blood work, because at least that can be covered by MSP, and that gives me a good representation of at least a baseline what's going on internally. I always tell my patients, I can see you externally, I can do the physical exam and know what's going on, but I need to know what's going on internally before I do any sort of treatment and apply my treatment modalities.
We didn't go too much
into hair
and urine element analysis, because that's something that, like, I'm very fascinated with, is like the toxic elements and non-toxic elements in my environment. So how do they test that?
So that is either hair or urine. So basically, you're looking at hair grows, about a centimeter a month. Obviously, some are faster than others, but they're wanting that hair from the top of the scalp, and each centimeter represents a month of testing. So, for example, if you gave a testing sample of a centimeter of hair, that would roughly constitute about a month of the last month of heavy metals. Whether they're toxic, because these tests are looking at both essential and non-essential elements. So both essential elements and then the toxic non-essential elements. So the last month. So if it's a longer strand, so say 6 centimeters, and that would be approximately 6 months. And these tests then have a report of all the heavy metals and their levels. And
so
different
just metals at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because yes. I was talking to, I had another podcast with, like, Environmental Defense Canada, and we were talking about, like, all of the various toxins that can be found in the home. And ever since doing that, I'm also doing a documentary film as well about the 5 factors, and with the first factor being health. I'm so fascinated in, like, getting all the toxic and all the toxic stuff tested, just to kind of learn. Because I live a very clean lifestyle, I think, but I'm sure, like, if I got it tested, I would find that maybe not so much. There's still things out there.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, there's so many conditions that can be related to toxic element exposure. That's why I said that even if it's brain fog or fatigue, and that patient has a career, a job that constitutes long-term exposure to heavy metals, that would be a no-brainer to then get this more specialized testing. But it can also be anxiety or depression, like lead, mercury toxicity can contribute to symptoms of both memory impairment. I know lead, again, can impair long-term memory. Cadmium can cause confusion, heart disease, So cadmium, again, toxic levels of cadmium can increase blood pressure, damage heart muscle. Lead has been shown to increase blood pressure, a lot of neurological problems, so numbness, tingling in the feet, hands, like that shouldn't be there. That could be arsenic. So this is a very in-depth test, and it can pick up a number of elements, as you can, you know, hear what I described. So not like lead, cadmium, mercury, arsenic, number of elements, and which can be very helpful for treatment. And often
then you have to figure out where that those things are in your environment so that you can
exactly
eliminate it. So like your furniture, exactly, the clothes you wear, the cosmetics you wear, the freaking paint on your walls, where you're working, your car, like Lord knows.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what you do. So, you know, you're educating people so beautifully on sustainable living, and that constitutes getting, you know, away from exposure to toxic elements and exposure to endocrine disruptors, because often they can also, what we're exposed to toxin-wise can disrupt our hormones too. So really, as a naturopath, everything is related in the body. And I'm a detective looking at where, you know, where do I need to focus my attention on in this particular patient?
Wow.
And what specialized or basic testing is needed to get that additional information so that then we're not, again, it's not contributing to heartache and frustration when we're going through treatment, because I know exactly then where that specialized treatment needs to lie and what it will look like, whether it's acupuncture, hydrotherapy, nutritional supplements, the list goes on and on, chiropractic manipulation or IV therapy. And, you know, since we're on the subject of toxic elements, chelation therapy is IV chelation therapy, which is helping to bind those toxic elements and eliminate them from the body. And it's a very in-depth therapy, but it can be very effective when I find a report on a patient that has elevated toxic elements. So we're really trying to treat the whole person, treat them effectively, combine, you know, utilize that healing triangle, utilize the therapeutic order that we talked about today, starting from the foundational health, determinants of health, and working our way up to support those weakened systems, and then adding the natural substances and possibly pharmaceuticals after that. But bottom layer is the biggest. That's where we focus a lot of our attention on.
That's beautiful. So I have a final question. It might be a bit of a tough one. I don't even know if you would have the answer. But I mean, we're very blessed in Canada. We have MSP, which is our medical services plan. And we can go to the doctor and it's essentially covered because, like, it's not free. We are paying for it.
Yes.
But it's a government thing and it's national. So we're blessed, but like in other countries, you know, they do have to pay for their medical expenses, and obviously for naturopath too. And I think a big concern that people have is they're going to go and they might get had. And when I say get had, it means like, you know, these medical professionals are going to try to take advantage of them and try to get as much money as they can out of them. Maybe, you know, there might be like two tests that are needed, but they'll order eight. Or in addition to that, you know, you might only need to see this practitioner once or twice, but you have to come in for like six or eight sessions according to like their plan. So like, how can you truly determine whether or not you're being had? Do you have
an answer to that? Such a great question. Honestly, it's such a great question. And it's really the bane of my existence as a naturopathic doctor, because it is such a common and valid concern. You are paying, you know, hundreds of dollars at a time sometimes, and you want to know that what you're spending, like you're investing in your health, right? So my like short answer would be, you want to invest in your health, you want to invest in your prevention rather than the disease itself, right? So, because you are obviously going to be spending a ton of money if you have a number of chronic health conditions. So the earlier you catch it, the better, the more comprehensive treatment, the better. So that's one point. But the second point would be that you're right, not all naturopaths are created equal, just like not all medical doctors are created equally. But I will say, when the medical profession the pro there is that they all follow the same, you know, treatment hierarchical treatment ladder, right? They're all looking at the same type of treatment plan. So there is a little bit more consistency when you see one medical doctor versus another. When it comes to naturopaths, we all have our own way of, we're all taught the same, but we all have our own favorite modalities, areas of focus. And so you're right, patients can spend a lot more for the same exact treatment, or for the same exact condition rather, if they see one naturopath versus the other. This is what I say to answer your question. Ask for a complimentary meet and greet. So you're not spending anything out of pocket. It can be between 10 and 20 minutes, depending on the practitioner. But I will say that I've seen about 99% of naturopathic doctors offering this for this very reason, because they're a little bit of, there's differences between each of us. And so you want to A, resonate with that practitioner, B, trust them in a vulnerable state, and then C, ask what sort of treatments, what sort of testing would you recommend for my particular symptom, for example. And yes, in 10 to 20 minutes, you're not going to get an exact treatment plan, but you will get an idea. And the benefit of this is that you can then do it with maybe 1 to 2 to 3 to even, like, however many naturopaths you want to do a complimentary meet and greet with, you can, and then decide what is best for me, and you will figure out where you're being had or not.
I didn't know that there is complimentary meet and greets offered. Are there any websites where, like, people rate their, like, there's Rate My MD? Is there a Rate My MD?
You better start it.
Like, I'm not busy enough.
Yeah, I know. No, I don't know of that. Know of such a site, but it would be great. You can go to our college. And if you're within BC and listening to this now, you can go to the BCNA, BC Naturopathic Association website, and there is a practitioner directory there. So you want to look for practitioners, rather, that are in good standing with the BCNA, that are in good standing with the College of Naturopathic Physicians of BC, so CNPBC, and that have been accredited and licensed. That when they are saying that they are quote unquote specialized, so you really shouldn't be using the term specialized. That's what our college says not to do. But if you have a certification in acupuncture, which you need in IV therapy, chelation, prescribing authority, Botox, facial fillers, that you need additional certification beyond that degree.
All day. I'm so exactly. Botox. It's so gross. Yeah. So, like, don't even get me started.
So that's not my certification. But like, naturopathic, seriously, can do that, right?
Really? Yeah,
they can. Oh, they can do that. So that's
you?
Why I'm saying
you're a naturopathic doctor. Are you supposed to?
That's a whole other discussion.
Toxins into a person's freaking body. I mean,
but you want to make sure that naturopathic doctor is certified in IV, certified in prescribing authority, certified in acupuncture, if that's what they're advertising on their website. So, and this kind of brings me to the caveat to this whole podcast, is everything that I suggested here, I am a naturopathic doctor. I am not treating you. So you have to see your individual healthcare professionals, whether that is a medical doctor and a naturopath. But you want to be, you know, don't take this advice and diagnose, treat yourself, see a healthcare professional.
For sure. And like, mm-hmm. when you do, obviously, medical professional and a naturopathic doctor, like, do that balance, that due diligence, do the consultations if they're, an option. And then be wary of upselling too, right? Because at the very end, there will be people saying, like, you need this herb or you need blah, blah, blah. So maybe take it step by step. Don't do everything all at once. It might be a bit much.
Absolutely. And second opinions are there for a reason too, right? Okay. So you don't have to spend any money. Do the complimentary meet and greets. Maybe talk to one or two or three naturopathic doctors, and you'll get the sense of there might be a common base layer there that they're talking about increasing your water, breath work, proper nutrition, but then in terms of the specialized testing, or the supplements or herbs that you need, what are the differences in that approach? And so you'll pick up very quickly where you're being upsold.
Yeah. So in the meet and greet, like complimentary meet and greet, you can actually talk about your symptoms with these people. It can't
100%.
If they stop and they're like, hey, that's actually for a consultation, you have to pay for that. Just move on to somebody that actually will listen to you. Is that kind of?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Every one of my complimentary meet and greets, the first thing I'm asking is, what brought you in here today? What's your most bothersome symptom? So I want to, the meet and greet is to see if there is a rapport there. See if that patient, like I can treat anybody, right? Pretty much anybody for, I should say that with a caveat, that if they need to be seen by a specialist, then I obviously recommend that they go see their family doctor and they get referred. But for the most part, the rapport is not really my concern. I'm more concerned about whether the patient feels comfortable with me and they feel that they can trust me with their health and trust me as their guide, right? The body is an amazing natural healer. We're just guiding it. So you want to see if you have that rapport. So yeah, you want to be able to express yourself freely in that meet and greet. Absolutely.
Awesome. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that. So we'll just leave it with Dr. Theja is going to be doing a blog post on the Sustainable Life App website. The blog post is going to be titled How an MD Thinks About Your Health. And she's going to basically write down everything we've talked about today, maybe a little bit extra too. And please check out that blog post if you kind of need a bit of a reminder. And create your allergy list and all your sensitivity list and your medication thing. I think that's like my biggest takeaway from our conversation today is that is such an invaluable thing to have, especially if you're seeing so many different practitioners.
Yes. And I have a whole post on this medication safety, because again, as a pharmacist, I find this so, pharmacist and naturopath, I find this so important. Medication safety, health advocacy. So you can find that on my website, tejawellness.ca. And I'm practicing at Sinclair Wellness Center, but you can go to my website, book online for a telehealth or phone consult, and then go to M's website, Sustainable Life, to find the additional blog post that we talked about today. It was so much fun talking with you today. I could talk to you for hours.
And any of the listeners, if you feel like your friends should listen to this podcast or anyone else in your life should, tell them about the Sustainable Life podcast, and sustainablelifeapp.com is where you can find the blog post. So thank you.
Thank you for having me, Em.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. The Sustainable Life App is a digital platform which includes a mobile app, website, podcast, and documentary series, all centered around the five factors for sustainable consumption: impact on human health, environmental impact, respect for human rights, respect for animal rights, and last but not least, socioeconomic advantage. Because we want brands and businesses who have sustainable practices to succeed. The purpose of the free Sustainable Life app, available on both Apple and Android, is to connect you with sustainable brands and businesses worldwide. Use the app to do direct-to-consumer online shopping or for the fun hashtag shop local function, through which you can find local retail shops, grocery stores, cafes, restaurants, salons, spas, event venues, eco hotels, eco tours, and even eco service providers like makeup artists, naturopaths, and dog groomers. This app was created to make sustainable living easy for you. Use it at home and while you travel to live a life in line with your core values. And of course, to hashtag shop local. The app is available on both Apple and Android devices. Have a story idea or suggestions for a future guest for our podcast? Visit www.sustainablelifeapp.com to submit an idea, or email us at podcast@sustainablelifeapp.com with your guest or show idea suggestions. Just a note that we are a non-judgmental community.
It is our belief that no one is perfect, but if we all do our part to consume more sustainably, there will naturally be a positive ripple effect worldwide. Our hope is that the app helps to positively impact your health, the environment, and all living beings. On a legal note, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the guest and do not necessarily reflect that of Mangla Bansal, Tell Your Story Productions, Inc., and its subsidiaries, affiliates, and associated companies, together with all respective officers, directors, and employees thereof. Thank you for being such an important part of our community. The love enlighten me salutes the love enlighten you. See you next time.